Das alles beherrschende internationale Thema ist der US-Angriff auf Venezuela und die Entführung von Präsident Maduro. Maduro wird jetzt in den USA der Prozess gemacht wegen seiner angeblichen Betätigung im Drogenhandel. Was US-Präsident Trump als Sternstunde der US-Politik feiert, könnte allerdings wie ein Bumerang zurückschlagen und die Glaubwürdigkeit der USA international völlig vernichten. Wie bewertest du das Vorgehen von Trump in Venezuela und gegenüber Maduro? Zeigt es die Stärke oder die Schwäche der USA?
Well, first of all, the notion that credibility can be attached to an action like this is ludicrous. There's no legitimacy at all in what President Trump has authorized to be done against Venezuela. We're starting to see that the case that was made against Maduro is just falling apart. It's a manufactured case. The United States had said that he was the head of this cartel in Venezuela. And now the United States admits that the cartel doesn't exist. It's just they made it up. As they start to dig deeper, they're going to find out that the things that they accuse Maduro of, according to the gray zone and the fantastic reporting being done by Max Blumenthal there, it was actually done by the CIA, that the crimes that Maduro is accused of were crimes carried out by the CIA. If America has any credibility left as a nation, it will be in our judiciary, where the rule of law must hold forth. And this case must be dismissed, and Maduro must be, ordered released by the judiciary. If this doesn't happen, then America no longer exists, because what Trump did is say that there is no such thing as international law anymore. And he and his administration are just saying it. This is the rule of strength. That's it. That's all that matters now, is the rule of strength. Well, it wasn't that strong what we did. I mean, yes, we put 200 guys and a bunch of helicopters into Caracas for a daring raid to kidnap, a defenseless man and his 70-year-old wife. 32 Cuban security guards were killed. We don't know if they were killed defending Maduro or slaughtered after being taken prisoner or eliminated by collaborators. But we don't know enough. This is not anything America should be proud of. This basically shows that America has ceased to be a nation of reason, and we are a nation of irrationality. We've become literally the most dangerous nation in the world, a nation that nobody in the world can deal with in a responsible manner, because you can't trust us. Our word does not count. So that's where we're at here. It's already boomeranged. This has destroyed the credibility of the United States. We have no credibility anymore. I would hope that the world would respond accordingly. You don't deal with nations like the United States. You ignore them. You shun them. But you don't sit there and reward them for their actions.
Welchen Nutzen will die Trump-Regierung aus dieser Angelegenheit ziehen? Stand jetzt ist Maduro zwar entführt, aber die chavistische Regierung in Venezuela sitzt nach wie vor fest im Sattel, jetzt mit Vizepräsidentin Delcy Rodriguez an der Spitze. Man hört Trump zwar davon reden, die USA würden die Kontrolle über ganz Venezuela übernehmen, aber können sie das wirklich? Und was wäre dafür notwendig?
Look, all that happened is that we kidnapped the leader of Venezuela. Now, this was done, I believe, with the assistance of Venezuelans who betrayed their country, betrayed their president. I believe that the CIA has been at work in Venezuela for some time now, identifying fractures within the Venezuelan government and isolating individuals in power and buying them off. This is why we were able to fly helicopters in and not get shot down. This is why there wasn't a major military force waiting for us as we landed to abduct the president of Venezuela. And now there's a power struggle going on inside Venezuela. Yes, the vice president has been sworn in, and yes, there appears to be solidarity, but there isn't solidarity in Venezuela. We must be honest about this. There are problems. There are factions that are fighting amongst each other. The United States promised, apparently, many of these individuals great wealth that will be accrued through the sale of Venezuelan oil, and these people bought into that notion. So, now we have to see what happens after, Maduro was seized. What happens inside Venezuela? I believe that, the CIA has told the president that, the people who are sympathetic to the goals and objectives of the United States will be in control, and that the United States will be able to exercise influence over Venezuela using these people. Right now, it doesn't appear that they are in control, but it's far too early to predict, what the final outcome of this is. But it appears that the United States has taken a path that avoids the necessity of putting, an invasion force on the ground in Venezuela. That would be suicide for the president. The United States, yes, I know people get angry when I say this, but I'll say it again. Nobody can beat our military in a stand-up fight. And if we went into Venezuela, we would slaughter the Venezuelan militia, we would slaughter the Venezuelan army, and we would slaughter the Venezuelan people the same way we slaughtered the Vietnamese. Yes, there was resistance, and yes, they killed 50, 60,000 Americans, but we killed millions. We destroyed a nation. It's nothing to be proud of. It's just a statement of fact, a statement of reality. And if we went into Venezuela, we would lose eventually because America would be worn down because we don't, have what it takes to, sustain, a senseless struggle over the course of time. But it wouldn't be a military defeat. It would be a political defeat. Militarily, we can go in and we can kill everybody. That's what we do. We're better at it than anybody. But we don't want to do that. And I think Trump understands the trap, the Venezuelan trap, and wants to avoid putting American boots on the ground because this would create a political nightmare for him here at home. Right now, he's deceived many of his supporters into believing that there's been this quick, painless, bloodless victory, bloodless from the American standpoint. This is what he promised, peace through strength. Look how we are. We sent 200 Delta Force into Caracas, and we have defeated Venezuela with no deaths, no body bags, nothing. And we don't know what the future holds. Maybe this will play out the way he wants. Maybe there are people in Venezuela who will eventually take power and do the bidding of the United States. Maybe not. But the perception of the Trump supporters is that we've won a quick victory. People need to also understand something about Americans. We are collectively the dumbest people in the world about the world we live in. We don't know anything about the world we live in. We barely know anything about ourselves. And the notion that the average American citizen understands the nuances and complexities of Venezuela, I'd be surprised if most people could even point it out on a map, let alone describe the geography, the topography, the geology, what makes Venezuela interesting. Where are the oil fields located? What other mineral resources are in Venezuela? What is the population of Venezuela? How is that population distributed? Americans have no clue about any of this, and yet they're sitting there talking as if we've accomplished something great in Venezuela. It's a sad state of affairs.
Hältst du einen erneuten Angriff der USA auf Venezuela für wahrscheinlich? Werden sie Delcy Rodriguez oder andere Minister ausschalten? Wie würde die US-Bevölkerung auf eine solche Eskalation der Aggression reagieren?
As long as no Americans come home in body bags and we blow things up and it looks cool on TV, we're going to be happy. There's very few Americans. You know, here's one of the problems is that the anti-war movement in America died a long time ago because it stopped being an anti-war movement and it became an anti-president movement. There was an anti-war movement developed, when Bill Clinton was threatening, Iraq in the 1990s. But when George W. Bush became president, those people who were anti-Clinton suddenly went, well, we got our guy in the White House. We don't care anymore. And suddenly people rallied against George W. Bush. We're anti-war. And they were moving forward. I mean, the illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq was a thing that motivated a lot of people until Barack Obama became president. And then they disappeared because their boy was in the presidency. Barack Obama continued the same stupid policies. And the anti-war movement it couldn't get organized and won't get organized. And it doesn't exist anymore today. They're nothing. They're a bunch of, frankly speaking, elderly people who sit around and have meetings, and they do a lot of talking. Every once in a while, they put a demonstration here and a demonstration there. You have some people like Code Pink who are very effective at visuals, and getting attention that way. But it doesn't resonate amongst the American population. You know, the day of putting 1 million people in Central Park in protest of America's wars of aggression is long past. And so we have a nation of sheep who just want to be led, and they're looking for a shepherd. And, Donald Trump right now is the shepherd, and he is creating this perception of strength, and so people are just bleeding contentedly as they follow the shepherd. They don't understand that shepherds aren't there to do anything other than eventually lead them to the slaughter. And that's what Donald Trump's doing, is leading us straight to the slaughter. But again, we're just not collectively not smart enough to understand what's happening. I know a lot of, I have a very good friend, Dennis Kucinich. He's a former congressman, has run for office. And he takes umbrage when I criticize the intelligence of the American voter. Well, of course he does, because he needs that voter to be in office. But the fact of the matter is the American electorate is comprised of fundamentally stupid people, idiots, who just go to vote either along party lines or along single issue things. And they vote on superficial analysis of topics. They have no understanding of the complexities of any of the major events. And Venezuela is proof positive. People just don't understand what's going on. Max Blumenthal's out there exposing the lies. This should be stuff people should be demanding, the impeachment of Trump and, frankly speaking, the disbandment of Congress to be replaced by a whole new body of people because of the failure of their jobs. But instead, people are just nodding, saying, no, the system works. How can you say it's not the rule of law? There's an indictment. Scott, they indicted him. The Southern District of New York indicted him. Well, did you read the indictment? And you do understand that you can indict a ham sandwich in the United States, that an indictment is not proof of guilt. It's all it shows is that the system was able to, intimidate a grand jury with enough lies to buy off on, a statement of probable cause. But Maduro's not guilty of anything. He's not been found guilty of anything. He is shrouded with the presumption of innocence, and yet Donald Trump is acting as if he's a guilty man. And that, I'm ashamed to be an American today. I mean, I love my country, and I love, you guys know you prick me the wrong way, and I push back. But it's shameful the way we're behaving. It's absolutely shameful. I've always been hopeful that somewhere in the Trump administration there was, a man who was just being a political realist, dealing with the reality of the situation as it exists today. But all I see now is a political opportunist, a narcissist, a man who has allowed himself to become a cult of personality, a dictator. And literally, we have a dictator today in Donald Trump. Congress will do nothing to stop this man. And the American people, we have become little more than the citizens of Rome, just keep us entertained with enough blood and gore on TV, but not too close. We just want to watch other people die. Keep us fed, and keep us, you know, sated with the notion of potential wealth, and we'll allow you to do anything.
Maduro soll in New York der Prozess gemacht werden. Ihm werden zahlreiche angebliche Verbrechen zur Last gelegt, wie der Drogenhandel, aber auch Absurditäten wie der Besitz von Maschinengewehren. Maduro selbst bezeichnete sich bei der ersten Anhörung als Kriegsgefangenen. Sein Anwalt plädierte wie erwartet auf nicht schuldig. Wird der ganze Prozess zu einer riesigen Farce für Trump? Gibt es überhaupt eine rechtliche Basis, auf der ein gekidnappter Präsident einer souveränen Nation in einer anderen Nation der Prozess gemacht werden kann? Hätte so ein Urteil irgendeine internationale Legitimität?
There's nothing legitimate about anything that's happening right now. As I said, if America is going to hold on to anything that says we have hope, don't give up on us, you know, somewhere in this ugly charade of narcissism that exists, there's a spark of what we are, a nation of laws, the Constitution, that it matters. It's going to be play out in this courtroom. This charge must be dismissed with prejudice. There's no legal basis whatsoever for Maduro to be brought before an American judge in an American court. This indictment doesn't answer the basic question of jurisdiction. This is the legitimate, not de facto, but de jure head of state. He's the head of state because Venezuela has said he is the head of state. He functioned as the president of Venezuela. He is the legitimate head of state recognized by Venezuela and much of the world. So therefore, there is no jurisdiction in the United States whatsoever to try this man. None. And so this case must be thrown out. If they don't and they move forward, you know, already we see a weakening of the rule of law. But now, you know, even if you open the door for the farce, there has to be actual crimes committed. Maduro has committed no crimes. The indictment falls apart on its face. It's poorly written, poorly researched, to zero factual basis. And when you start calling witnesses in, I mean, as you know, Max Blumenthal pointed out, the star witness is this turncoat, you know, Venezuelan general that nobody in the prosecution should want to get on the stand and be subjected to cross-examination, because it will be an ugly day for America when this turncoat traitor, is cross-examined by a competent lawyer. This is America on trial, literally. America is on trial here. And I just pray that that we have a judge capable of saving the union, because that's what we're talking about here. If we allow the courts to be corrupted in this fashion, then there's nothing left, because Congress no longer exists. Congress simply has ceased to function. They are little more than just a rubber stamp of the president. The president ignores them, didn't seek congressional approval, isn't seeking congressional approval. The members of Congress who, you know, matter, when I say matter, they only matter because they are the compliant senators who kneel at Caligula's feet, to bring up the Roman Empire again. I mean, that's because we are ruled by Caligula, this bloodlust, criminal human being. The only hope we have left is the court system. And I have to say, from my own personal experience, it's not a good court system. It's fundamentally unfair, and it lends itself to being abused by power. But at the end of the day, the federal court has always come through making the right decision about fundamental issues. And this one is so fundamental to who we are, because if we allow this president to kidnap the leader of a sovereign state and bring him to trial in America on trumped up charges, then we have no judiciary. It's just becoming another, rubber stamped, facilitator of dictatorship.
Man könnte den eingeschlagenen Kurs der US-Regierung so interpretieren, dass es ihnen darum geht, ihren hegemonialen Anspruch über die westliche Hemisphäre zu untermauern. Regionale Widersacher in Lateinamerika werden aus dem Weg geräumt. Aber stärkt Trump damit wirklich die internationale Position der USA? Oder vernichtet er den letzten Rest an Glaubwürdigkeit seiner eigenen Regierung, gerade in Richtung Russland und China?
I can't speak on behalf of Russia and China, but I just wrote an article that basically tells the Russians to believe, to start paying attention to people like Sergei Karaganov, an esteemed political scientist who I've interviewed and had discussions with. And, you know, I've pushed back because, you know, my own personal history of involvement with the U.S. government is one where the U.S. government is a trustworthy negotiating partner. We negotiated the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty back in the 1980s. I was an implementer of that treaty, and I know how assiduous we were about adhering to the rule of law, adhering to the mandate of the treaty, making sure that, you know, we did what we were supposed to do, and we held the Russians or the Soviets accountable, and they held us accountable, and it worked. It was honorable business. That was, to me, one of the bright, shining moments of being an American, where not only were we doing the right thing, getting rid of entire classes of nuclear weapons, but we did it the proper way through a negotiated treaty where we adhered strictly to that which we said, that, you know, our word was our bond. So I know America's capable of doing this. This is the America that I always try to fall back on. But today we have a presidency that's purely transactional in nature, and it's a one-way transaction. This president will enter in an agreement, you know, only if he deems the agreement to be to the benefit of the United States. Now, other nations will enter under the belief it will also be beneficial to them. Now, if the agreement continues to be beneficial to America, but not beneficial to them, the president doesn't care. The agreement must stand. But the moment the agreement stops being beneficial to America, the agreement is done. He's not bound to it. He will drop it. No treaty is worth the paper it's written on with Donald Trump as the president of the United States. No agreement at all. And so Sergei Karaganov's right. The United States is an untrustworthy negotiating partner that cannot be dealt with. And China needs to understand this as well. Stop pretending that Donald Trump is somebody you can have an agreement with. You can't. Cannot be trusted at all. Zero trust. And the whole world needs to recognize this. I hope Europe is understanding this now. You know, it's time for you to wake up. Whatever you think NATO was, isn't. Whatever you think America, you know, could be, won't be. I've said this before and I'll say it again. You know, when I say that we're the most ignorant people in the world about the world we live in, I mean it. I mean, yes, we have, you know, you guys are used to, you know, the pudgy, pasty American tourists coming off the airplane and running around Europe, you know, in the summer, you know, oh, look, Marge, it's the Eiffel Tower. Wow, how cool. Can we take a picture there? Hey, look, Marge, it's the Alps. It's very pretty. Look, Marge, it's tulips in Amsterdam. How nice, Marge. You know, and then they go home. But it's all superficial. They don't know the history of Europe. They don't know anything about Europe. They don't try to speak the language, you know, but that's, you know, that's the superficial, you know, ignorance of that. But the ignorance disguises the ultimate truth. We don't like you. We don't like you. We don't care about you. See, a true friend cares. I mean, I have friends that I've known since college, and, you know, maybe we've been out of touch, but if I find out that, you know, their children are sick or that, you know, a father passed away, it's a phone call. It's a visit. I go to the funeral. I'm there for my friend in need. I care about my friend. You know, that's what you do. So when a friend is in need, that, you know, a true friend says, hey, what can I do to help? How can I help you out? But America isn't your friend. We use you. You know, it's not even a relationship, you know, hi, your boyfriend, girlfriend. No, you're at best, you're a prostitute that we pay for services. But that's it. Do your services and get the hell out. We don't want to talk to you. We don't care about you. We don't want to know about you. And that's most America. We just don't care enough to know about you. And so here you have a situation where you think that this is the America of the past. You know, the America that sent its sons off to help liberate Europe from, you know, the scourge of Nazi Germany that was there, the Marshall Plan, the America of the 1980s. Again, my experience in the 1980s in Germany and West Germany, you know, yeah, we occupied West Germany at the time, but, you know, I remember every weekend they had this thing called Volksmarches. There was this community-based thing where, you know, the whole community just get out and go on a march in the woods, on a path. And when you finished it, there was a little celebration. You drank beer and ate bratwurst, and you got a little plaque and you put it on your wall. And the really cool people, when you went to their house, they had all the little Volksmarks plaques on the wall that showed that they were out there. And you got to bond with the Germans, and learn about the Germans and care about the Germans. And there was genuine friendship between the German and American people at that time, genuine friendship. Between the German and American people, because we cared. But something's happened, you know, and you know, it takes two, I guess, to fail a relationship. You know, but the United States stopped caring about, I think it happened when we started differentiating between old Germany and old Europe and new Europe. And, you know, right around the Iraq war, I saw a lot of strain happening. But I think Europe always wanted America to be what it used to be, that the strong, silent partner behind you who was always there for you no matter what, but sort of let you do whatever you wanted to do anyways. And lost sight of the fact that after the Cold War ended, America stopped being a nation that needed allies and started being a nation that was the sole remaining superpower on the face of the earth looking for global hegemony. And when you're a global hegemonist, it means you're using people. You're not working with people. And over time, that's what's happened. And I don't think Europe understands America. And I don't think America understands Europe. And today, I think Europe's going to be shocked when we take over Greenland. Because we're taking it over, guys. It's ours. We own it already. We occupy it. As they said, there won't be a shot fired. It'll be a purely administrative decision. And one day Trump is going to wake up, sign a peace book paper, and says, Greenland belongs to us. And what are you going to do about it? What? You're going to go to war against us? No, you're not. You know, but it will be the end of NATO, which many people believe is a good thing. I believe it's a good thing. You know, but what will happen to Europe at that point in time? Because, you know, there's European countries that won't divorce themselves from America because they can't divorce themselves from America because their political and economic elites are too closely tied to America. And so Europe will fall apart. The European Union will fall apart. And this is the future. This is what Donald Trump's betting on. See, you and I are men of moral principles. And so we take a look at what Donald Trump's doing and we're shocked. We're ashamed. Understand though that the world isn't governed by people of moral principles. The world is governed by people who have made compromises of their moral principles to get to where they're at. And the United States is aware of every compromise they have made. We're aware of every price that needs to be paid to keep these people compliant. And so what we see Trump doing is exploiting this aspect of the failure of humanity. It's the last tool he has because it's not the tool you want. When you exploit the baseless character of human nature, eventually that will play out and all you have is chaos and anarchy and death and destruction. But that's what Donald Trump is going for. This is the last, you know, moments of the Roman Empire. You know, will we succeed in the Western Hemisphere? Yes. Who's going to stop us? The Mexican president? I mean, God bless her. But we'll just send 200 Delta Force guys in there and grab her, bring her to a court, call her a cartel facilitator. The Colombian president? We'll grab him. we're going to basically tell the leaders of every nation in the Western Hemisphere, if you don't play the game we want, we will take you out. Because that's what we've said. We are the only ones that matter in this hemisphere. We have literally come out and said, your resources are our resources. Listen to me, Canada. Listen very carefully. Your oil is our oil. It just is. And you can't have an independent energy policy that's to the detriment of the United States. The new Trump corollary of the Monroe Doctrine prohibits that. The lithium triangle. 60% of the world's lithium is there in that little triangle between Brazil, Argentina, and Chile. That's ours. We own it. We own everything. Nothing gets done. No, nothing gets developed. China, we're kicking you out. I mean, China just built a $1.3 billion port in Jiangkei in Peru. No, sorry. Belongs to us. Because what can China do? Nothing. Nothing. They don't have a blue water navy. You know, they're having a hell of a time figuring out how they're going to get troops from the Chinese mainland onto Taiwan. Now you're talking about they're going to bring them all the way across the Pacific through the American Navy to fight a land war in South America? Isn't going to happen. We're going to deconstruct the Belt and Roads Initiative in that China's put in place and take it over ourselves. And we will get away with it because there's nothing that can stop us. But eventually, you know, we have limited this realm, this Fortress America, to the Western Hemisphere. And once we consolidate power here, it's superficial consolidation, by the way. It's done purely, as I said, through intimidation, through fear, through exploitation. It's not a sustainable model. It will collapse from within. Meanwhile, while we're, you know, struggling against ourselves, the world will hopefully wake up. The world will hopefully wake up. Look, whatever the future of Europe is, let me just make it clear. Please stop trying to be like the United States. Do you really want to be like us? Just look at it. That's your future. Start being what you are. Now, you know, you have to decide what that is, but you need to be what you are, which means you have to learn to live in peace with Russia. Russia's your neighbor. How stupid are you to go to war with your neighbor? Well, you went to war with your neighbor because you believed the United States was backing you up. We're not there for you guys. You got to live with Russia. You got to live in peace with Russia. You've got to learn to link your economies to Russia because you're not going to be part of this American Western Hemisphere experiment. China, stop saying you're at war with China. That's an American model. Start economically interacting with China to make your economies healthy again. And if Europe, Russia, and China can all learn to get the gong together, then you don't need to worry about America. Let America rot. Let the Western Hemisphere, fall amongst itself. And then you'll be there to help pick up the pieces. Maybe one day America will wake up and remember what it was and what it should have been. But right now, you need to isolate us. You need to totally cut us off because we're diseased. We're poison. You know, that's just the reality of it. It's a shameful moment. Like I said, our only hope right now is in a courtroom in New York City.
Setzt der US-Angriff auf Venezuela und die Entführung von Maduro ein folgenschweres Fanal für die gesamte Geopolitik? Werden sich andere Staaten dieses Vorgehen als Beispiel nehmen? Was hindert etwa Russland daran, den ukrainischen Präsidenten Selenskyj und seine Gefolgschaft auszuschalten? Was hindert die Volksrepublik China daran, Taiwan wieder unter Kontrolle zu bringen? Ist es das Ende der Weltordnung nach dem Ende des Zweiten Weltkriegs?
On February 4th of 2021, Vladimir Putin flew to Beijing, China, to meet with Xi Jinping on the eve of the Winter Olympics there. These two men got together and they published a 5,000-word memorandum that basically rejected what was called the rules-based international order that was the mantra of the United States government for over the course of several administrations had been picked up and magnified by the Biden administration, that basically said the United States is the global hegemon and we rule not by the rule of law, but by a system of rules and organizations and structures that we imposed on the world in the aftermath of the Second World War. The World Bank, the International Monetary Organization, things of this nature. And they said, no, we're not playing that game anymore. We aren't here to support the American hegemon. We reject the American hegemon. We believe in a multipolar world and a world based on the rule of law. So when two leaders make such a commitment, such a formal commitment, I think it's superficial analysis to say, oh, the Russians now are going to become lawless because America became lawless. America was always lawless, just not to this extent. And the Russians and the Chinese said, no, the answer isn't for us to be like America. The answer is for us to be different than America, to be the, you know, to be nations that rule by the rule of law, the United Nations Charter. So I don't see, you know, look, if Russia wanted to have killed Zelensky, they could have killed him a long time ago. You know, he's alive through the grace of Russia. And that doesn't mean that they aren't going to kill him. The recent drone attack against the Russian presidency has caused the Russians to identify the Zelensky regime as a criminal terrorist entity. And that opens up the possibility for the special military operation transition into a counterterrorism operation, which would then, you know, pave the way for Zelensky and others to be taken out. That's a big step to eliminate, you know, the government of a sovereign state. It's something Russia has hesitated to do. And, you know, Putin has, is, you know, a lot of people apparently have come up and asked him to do it. And he said no, because that's not how nations who believe in the rule of law operate. China, again, I think, you know, the other thing I have to say is this, that the Russians and the Chinese have long-term visions of how they want things to look. You know, Russia is planning for a post-conflict reality that involves Ukraine. So the less you do to destroy the fabric of that connects you with somebody, Russia and Ukraine, the easier it is to restore that relationship. The less China does to destroy the fabric that links China and Taiwan, the easier it will be to absorb Taiwan seamlessly. That's their goal. That's their objective. Their goal isn't, you know, they're not the United States just looking for a political moment to sustain them through the next election, because that's what Venezuela is right now. It's a political moment. It's a perception, not a reality. The Russians and Chinese, I believe, deal with reality. And so I don't see them going down this path. I don't even believe they're tempted by it. I believe that they actually take solace in the fact that their approach is superior to that of the Americans. And, you know, basically you just need to, you know, isolate the United States and, you know, try to do damage control as we collapse amongst ourselves in this orgy of narcissism that is what American democracy has become. But I'm not worried about the Chinese and the Russians misbehaving. I think that if anything, what the United States has done, these illegal actions have strengthened the moral certainty and clarity that they have embraced by seeking a path defined by the rule of law, not a rules-based order.
Was für eine Chance haben Staaten, die sich eine Bevormundung durch die USA nicht gefallen lassen wollen, um sich vor einem US-Angriff zu schützen? Können allein Atomwaffen und eine hochentwickelte Raketentechnologie diese Sicherheit gewährleisten, sprich eine nukleare Abschreckung? Genau solche Gedankenspiele setzen nun ein, etwa in Serbien, aber sicher auch im Iran oder in den Staaten der Sahelzone. Wird damit der Weg geebnet für ein ungebremstes nukleares Wettrüsten?
That's one of the great dangers of when you have a nuclear-armed superpower behaving in such a grossly irresponsible manner, is that the again, when the United States says that international law doesn't matter, that it becomes basically the law of the jungle, the law of strength, you know, one of the whole premises of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty was the notion of international law, that agreements do matter, that treaties are binding. You know, and of course, it's been a struggle because nobody's ever lived up to the true promise of the Nonproliferation Treaty. It wasn't just about preventing other nations from getting nuclear weapons. It was about the nuclear armed powers getting rid of their nuclear weapons. And disarmament has become a joke, a fraud. I mean, yeah, I'm still wrestling with this. You know, I'm a huge proponent of disarmament. I cut my teeth in that. I did it throughout my life, but it's very, it becomes almost childishly naive to talk about disarmament today in the face of what America's doing. How can you ask nations to get rid of the very things that guarantee their survival in the face of a grossly irresponsible American superpower? You know, with Iran, they've made a decision. I think it's the right decision, but they have chosen not to have nuclear deterrence, but they have ballistic missile deterrence. That means they have the ability to inflict harm on Israel and the United States to such a degree that it hopefully can deter direct attacks. This is why we see the indirect approach being taken place through the facilitation of, you know, so-called popular uprisings against the Iranian regime. You know, we're in for an ugly period of time. Again, I think there are limits to American power. I think these limits are both real and political. I don't think the United States can survive a major war in the Middle East that absorbs our national treasure and requires the commitments of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of American troops. We're not ready for such a war in the Pacific, and we certainly don't want such a war in Europe. This is why we're sort of retracting into Fortress America. So at this juncture, I don't see the United States flexing the Venezuela model outside of the Western Hemisphere. I don't see us, you know, going in and, you know, kidnapping or trying to kidnap the head of Iran or something of that nature. But you know, we're a rabid dog. We are literally a rabid dog, and the problem is, you know, this isn't To Kill a Mockingbird, and we can't have Atticus Finch come out and shoot the rabid dog because the rabid dog has nuclear weapons and will kill everybody. And that's the other thing people need to understand. We literally have an insane man in the office, supported by insane people who are insane, drunk on this notion of American unilateral power. There's no limit to what they'll do. And we need to be worried about nuclear weapons and such. And because you can't trust the United States, we need to understand that any effort to limit American nuclear power through arms control is an exercise in futility at this juncture because we can't be trusted. And so why even waste your time trying to negotiate with the United States? I think at this point in time, arms control is dead, and that Russia needs to be looking to, you know, making sure that their nuclear deterrent is so robust that even an insane man won't seek to, you know, to cross that line. China needs to do the same thing. North Korea needs to do the same thing. And you're sending the wrong signal. But it's the only signal you can send in the face of American insanity.
Liebe Zuschauer, wenn euch unsere Beiträge gefallen, teilt sie unbedingt in den sozialen Medien. Abonniert unseren Kanal und drückt auf die Glocke, damit ihr keine Veröffentlichung von Gegenpol verpasst.